about what other info. We learn from the writings of Bar Sulam in Hebrew or the Kabbalah for the students in English. We're reading, then we started the article Introduction to the Book of Zohar. We're in the second item. It is page 109 in Kabbalah for the Student. Okay, we've clarified a few questions that he starts from. It is usually his style, that he usually asks in the beginning questions that he will later clarify, so that the reader will understand, it will be clear to the reader what we're about to clarify. Not just talking, rather first understanding what we're lacking, and then an understanding of what we're about to complete, to answer. And besides these questions, he also adds here that in order to scrutinize these questions, we need to scrutinize additional means. He divides all these problems into questions and scrutinies. So go ahead.
Item 2. In order to clear up all of that, we need to make some preliminary inquiries. And not, God forbid, where it is forbidden, in the Creator's essence, of which we have no thought or perception whatsoever, and thus have no thought or utterance of Him, but where the inquiry is a mitzvah, a commandment, the inquiry of His deeds. It is as the Torah commands us, know thy God, thy Father, and serve Him. And as it says in the poem of unification, by our actions we know you.
Meaning, first of all, besides the questions, we also have these inquiries. And these inquiries, he says that it's something preliminary, that we need to first and foremost clear up the ground. I have many questions, but these questions are found around a lot of mess and waste, and I don't really understand these questions that much. I'm unable to scrutinize between them. It's like I'm searching for something in a general unclean place, in a messy place. I have to clean it up. I need to scrutinize exactly what's going on. What am I asking exactly? Where does this stem for? On top of which ground I'm asking it? Where am I allowed and where am I not allowed to scrutinize? Meaning, where am I capable of scrutinizing it according to the way I'm built and where I'm given the ability to examine things and where I cannot? Meaning, there are many conditions that ought to be clarified in order to understand which questions can be answered, can receive a fulfillment, an answer. And thus he says that first and foremost we need to, and that's an example, that's a nice example, the first inquiry, of cleaning the ground around the first inquiry. First of all, he says we clean up the ground very simply. We don't touch the Creator Himself. But the emanator stays somewhere there because it is not clothed in our matter. And what is not clothed in our matter is we're unable to scrutinize, to research. And he scrutinizes this in length in another introduction, an introduction to the Book of Zohar. In the preface to the Book of Zohar, sorry. So we can scrutinize only matter and substance clothed in matter. So if we can attain only the form of giving, then from His actions we will know you, we can research the Creator. So what does that mean? From your actions, we will know you. From the actions He made to us, the way He made us, from the moment I started working on this inner change within me, from the moment I've entered this connection with Him, and until I attain the entire process I've underwent, until the end of my correction, I get to know Him more and more and more. He influences me more and more and more until I reach my end of correction. When I reach my end of correction, I reach exactly that same form that He has, when He is completely clothed in me, the upper. And then from your actions, we will know you. We will know you in what? In His actions. And out of His actions, we know. We don't know Him, we know His image from His actions, from the way He's clothed in us. This is why it is called the Creator. Bo'u'e, come and see. And the first inquiry solves many problems, because we can already look at it. We can already take out those questions about inquiring the emanator or not, who can do it and who cannot do it. Rather, here, the inquiry is a commandment. It's the fundament of everything. We have to reveal the Creator. That's our first commandment. That's the most general commandment. And around it, there will revolve our life and the whole of reality, only so that we'll reveal the Creator. And thus, we need to always not forget this, that we are limited. As a result of our inner structure, we can acknowledge the Creator only from His actions, not know Himself, His essence. And this solves many problems of many people, philosophers, and etc. And we also direct ourselves correctly toward our engagement. What does that mean, to direct ourselves correctly? I have to change, and not the Creator. I have to be the one who makes the actions in order to reveal His actions. All the beginnings are within me. Of course, later we will know that it's not exactly the way it is, but I am the changing element, the changing ingredient. And this is the most important thing. His essence, and so perfection, eternity, and we cannot talk about Ein Sof. Just the way I reveal Him according to the changes within me, that occur within me. And this brings us much closer to the right, to the correct implementation. Meaning the first inquiry already cleans much of the waste that we're usually being confused with, and we're yet to speak about it, about the perception of reality and about many other things. This inquiry is very important, and it has many ramifications. Yes.
It says, from your actions we know you. Well, what does it mean, from your actions?
Tell me something about your mother. You will start saying, she knows how to cook so well, right, Niv? And how she makes different things for me. You're telling me about her actions, but I'm telling you, tell me something about your mother. Well, say something besides her actions.
No, I can't.
So why are you asking?
What are the actions of the Creator?
You are His action. The whole of creation is His action.
So how do I...
Besides our actions, we know nothing. That's how we built. On everything you speak about, you're talking about the action, not about the essence of that thing. You're talking only about the action and the result of that action. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about Shoresh Aleph Bet, but only about Gimel and Dalet. But what is clothed within the matter.
Okay, so I'll take it from here. I'll continue.
Speak from your own.
No, if I was here, say, just 6 months or a year, I would say I came to a religious person. He says, where the inquiry is a mitzvah. What is this thing? Well, what's a mitzvah?
A mitzvah is a commandment. You can say an order, ordinate, an order. What's the difference? Only that an order is something you have to implement, realize, without inquiring it, without feeling it, but just doing it. And that's it, by detaching yourself from it. Whereas a commandment is something that you have to do, especially in your heart and soul. And that's the difference. You see, you served in the army, right? It is written that it's forbidden to smoke in Shabbat. And below it, it's written, that's an order. Why do they add this? If I know that it's forbidden to smoke in Shabbat, why do I have an additional order there? What is the difference between an order and a commandment? You tell me.
Well, no, an order is something you have to, you're subordinated to. A mitzvah sounds something philosophical, intangible. It's not something that really obligates you.
No, do good deeds, be a good guy. You came to a place where we define things differently. There is the religion of those simple people, and there's the religion, and there's the and there's knowledge of the Torah. That's above reason, because the Torah is given to correct the desire to receive. And this is why everything that is related to the correction of the desire to receive is called a mitzvah. And the force by which you correct the desire to receive is called Torah.
Yeah, but he writes the inquiry in his the deeds of the Creator is commanded by the Torah. Where does it come from?
He writes, he says, you should know the Creator thy God and work him. And work for him, worship him. The Torah is the entire process, mechanism that influences us in order to correct us. It's called the Torah, this mechanism. All the lights that come to us from above, from Ein Sof, are called Torah. Zeranpin is called Torah. Zeranpin Datzilut is called Torah. And all the books that Kabbalists have written as a result of attaining these actions of the sublime mechanism are also called Torah. I enter into a shop, and there are billions of books there. And let's say that all the books that were written by Kabbalists, meaning as a result of attaining the mechanism that corrects a person, are called Torah. Besides the Pentateuch, they're also called Torah. Ask me why.
Why?
Let's say your son goes to learn a lesson, a Mishnah lesson. What have you learned? I've learned Torah. What kind of a Torah do you learn? What have you learned? And the book that is called Torah? What? A certain weekly portion or what? No, we've studied a Mishnayot. Let's say from, I don't know, about Nashim or Korbanot. There's different names of parts in the Mishnah. So he says that he learned Torah, but why do you call it Torah? Because everything that comes to correct our ego, our desire, is called Torah. As it is written, I've created the even collection of the earth, I've created Torah as a spice because the light in it reforms. This is why all the books that were written by Kabbalists are called Torah. Yes.
So last Friday, I was in the synagogue, and then I came outside. I saw someone, taking the step towards the,
Why are you talking this way to people?
No, but we need to open people's eyes, people's minds. Shouldn't we open their eyes? I don't understand. What? Let's just keep quiet and not do anything.
Why are you always going to correct others? Correct yourself.
No, but what can they teach me?
No, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to listen to that. Why do you think you're greater righteous than him?
I'm not saying I'm more righteous than them. I'm asking you as a guide. I'm asking him like that. Why are you bound to that place?
It's a sacred place.
Why?
Because people who come there, I'll make you religious. No problem. People come there. In this place, they have different thoughts. They think about life, about the essence of life, maybe about life and death, about how to make themselves better themselves. And they clean themselves to some extent from the thoughts that they come with from the street. They read from books where it is written how to behave better to another, how to make different actions. They don't really understand, but still, it is a place where a person doesn't usually harm another. So it already deserves appreciation. In your home, he won't behave towards you the same way, because he knows your home, really. You cannot erase everything. You cannot do that. You need to respect what the people respects. I dwell within my people. It is not good to just be anti-religious. It is not good. You see how it is all in all acceptable in the world, and people know that, understand that you have something better to swap it with. It is written, don't place a barrier before a blind person. If you have no way to complement it, it is written that the one who strikes a beast should pay for it. Meaning, if you strike the beast-style soul within a person, then you have to complete it, to pay for it. Do you have something to complete him with? Is he willing to listen to what you want to tell him and say, wonderful, who should I buy? Why should I worship this coffin? I should worship the Creator or whatever. But can you convince him? Can you truly convince him? No. And if you have a contact with something that belongs to an upper, that relates to the upper, to the higher, you have to respect it. I once passed with Rabash next to Bloomfield Soccer Stadium in Tel Aviv. And he told me, we need to respect this place. You hear what I'm saying? Rabash, for you, is an authority, right? Yes or no?
Yes, of course.
So you're going to Bloomfield, to the soccer stadium, and you will bow before the stadium. Yes? Why? Because he said simply, he said that people come here to enjoy life. Once a person enjoys, he doesn't curse the Creator. People who go to protests, who come to your work to demand a dime that you might give them from all you have, from everything you have, they curse you, the Creator, and everyone, because they have nothing to provide themselves with. And those who come to the soccer stadium are enjoying life. At least during their the time they spend there, they enjoy. And as long as he enjoys, it's a good place. It's not a sacred place, but it's a good place that it deserves to be respected, because he doesn't want to harm. He just enjoys. And enjoys, this means that out of his heart, from the bottom of his heart, he's thanking the Creator for creating a soccer stadium. I'm talking to you seriously. It's not simple. Rising in the degrees of sanctity is possible only from within happiness, from within joy and good relation. You cannot kill people on your way, and then you'll become righteous.
So I don't do anything. So what do you suggest? What, just to be stay neutral, and then what, just let things suffer blow, and then what will be the end? That's what you're saying. What, not do anything?
My recommendation is to correct yourself.
So I'll correct myself. How will I correct myself?
Yes,
so I'll
go
to the Bloomfield Stadium, and what? What am I supposed to do? No, wait. What am I supposed to do?
I told you, correct yourself. Leave everyone alone. There's no one in the world. It's all you. Including whatever you want, it is all you. If you would have been incorporated from them, you wouldn't have felt them. Simple as that. Well, maybe we'll reach inquiry number two. It's only the first inquiry. That was only an introduction. That we inquire the Creator's actions alone. The force that works within the operated one.
Inquiry number one. How can we picture a new creation, something new that is not included in him before he creates it, when it is obvious to any observer that there is nothing that is not included in him? Common sense dictates it, for how can one give what one does not have?
Meaning, what does he say? He says that everything there is within me and in my world and what was, exists, and will exist, stems from the upper. The bad things, the good things, everything comes from Him, and you can address Him alone in return with whatever you have. That's it. Everything that comes was first and foremost incorporated in Him. Then it comes to you, to your understanding, to your cognition, recognition, and you are connected only to Him. You have connection to you're not connected to anyone else. And the fact that it seems to you that there are more people around you, friends, a teacher, it is all only the Creator alone and you. And you are ought to reach a connection with Him, such a connection that everything that is that will be revealed between you will become a connection, a means to connect the both of you ever stronger. You have questions about that, but exactly about that. No, ask quickly.
What's the inquiry here? What's the question? I didn't get it. He stated a fact, and then what's the inquiry here? I didn't really get it.
How can we picture a new creation, something new that is not included in Him before He creates it? When it is obvious to any observer that there is nothing that is not included in Him, common sense dictates it. For how can one give what one does not have? So, everything is incorporated in the Creator, and everything comes from the Creator. And the creation, even though it is was new, in which perspective it is new? Meaning, there is a Creator and there is a creation. Is there something in this creation besides the Creator?
Probably not.
You don't know?
I don't know. There is me, perhaps.
It is a question whether you truly exist or not. I'm asking, what is a creation that doesn't exist within the Creator? Oh, after 20 years of teaching you. You see, every form is a new form. There is the departure of the mochin. Besides Chaim, no one knows. Well,
there's a will to receive.
Wonderful, there's a will to receive. Ah, will to receive. Who didn't know the answer? Why didn't you answer? You see? It just vanished. So, the desire to receive is what was renewed. That's the new creation. Did it exist within the Creator? It didn't. And still, it was renewed. From where? The Creator was the cause that made this innovation of the desire to receive. This is why it's called existence from absence. It didn't exist within the Creator, but it bursted through, was created by Him. And this action is called creation. This is the creation, solely. Nothing, everything else is not a creation. It's only a development, continuous development of what already exists. Rather, the emergence of existence from abstinence, this is called a new creation, meaning our desire. And this is why when I reveal, I don't know yet what is the desire to receive, by the way. Maybe I don't really know what's the desire to receive that we're talking about. But when I will reveal within me a desire to receive, then that same desire to receive that I will reveal will become this new creation.
So
it will be clear to me that this desire to receive has to be detached from the Creator. I don't know whether I'm in it or not yet.
So, again, the question is, how am I detached from the Creator? How the Creator created? How am I? What?
I don't know. He asks, he talks about it shortly. I don't want to philosophize about that. But the inquiry itself is clear, right? Later we'll scrutinize it further. Okay? No. Okay. In general lines. Now, inquiry number two. If you say that from the aspect of His almightiness, that He is almighty, He can certainly create existence from absence, meaning something new that is not in him, there arises the question, what is that reality which can be determined as having no place in him at all, but is completely new, meaning it doesn't exist within him at all. He doesn't need it. It doesn't exist within it. Within him, he is complete without this reality. Completely. But is completely new. And still he needs it. These are two things that contradict one another. There's a constant contradiction here. If he's so perfect, then why does he need this reality for? If he needs it, then maybe he wasn't perfect to begin with. What does it mean, existence from absence? That now it exists and beforehand it did not? What is the connection there is that exists between him and what he has created? Between this, the connection between existence and absence. These are things that are unclear. How can that be that his simple desire, he decided in a simple desire to create a desire to receive? Meaning by which inner action, by which thoughts, preparations, did he reach the necessity in creating a desire to receive? Well, that's what we learn about in the four aspects of direct light. The desire to receive is Malchut Ein Sof, and the way it develops from the desire to bestow, from the Shorish, from the root, how the desire to receive stems from the root, that's what we study. More questions? Okay, it's clear. Every inquiry is less complicated than the previous ones because it is based on the previous ones. Inquiry number three. This deals with what Kabbalists have said, that one soul is a part of God from above. Meaning, if I have a soul, I don't know if I'm a human being. Am I a human being? But actually, I am. I am a human being and I have a soul. This soul is a part of God from above. This is something, at least something, in such a way that there is no difference between him, the creator, and the soul. But he is the whole, and the soul is a part. And they compared it to a rock carved from a mountain. There is no difference between the rock and the mountain, except that he, the mountain, is the whole, and the rock is a part. Thus we must ask, it is one thing that a stone carved from the mountain is separate from it by an axe made for that purpose, meaning there is also something by which we can differentiate, detach, separate the mountain, the rock from that mountain, causing that separation of the part from the whole. But how can you picture that about him, about the Creator, that he will separate a part of his essence until it departs his essence and becomes separated from him? How come? By which acts? Meaning a soul, to the point that it can only be understood as part of his essence. Meaning, what does he say here? He says, he's using a different approach to reality here. He says that the whole of reality is nothing so great. Rather, what has happened is that the Creator seemingly invented a certain axe and was able to cut from himself a certain part. And that's it. He separated, differentiated a certain part from himself. And that's it. All in all, that's this new reality. Now, by how was this part differed, separated from the Creator? By the unequivalence of form. That now it has a desire to receive, and now it is separated. That's why that's called a part of God from above. And that's called, found within a human being. The human being is found. That's the wrapping that a person exists within. Besides Tzvika, someone else? There's no choice. Tell me, what's this thing with separating apart from his essence? We're not engaging with his essence. What's the difference between the Creator and his essence?
We're not engaged in
but
his
he's saying
essence.
Here,
but in this part, we do. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. In this part, we do. We do engage with it. The part, that part which he separated from himself, that belongs to us. It belongs to creation.
So let's get differently. That thing, when we are working in attaining the Creator, right? So what you reveal? You reveal His essence, or it doesn't include His essence, or His essence is something that is separate from the Creator, from what we call Creator.
His essence is not something we can discover, because in His essence there is no will to receive, and therefore it's impossible to attain. It's just impossible. I can't put myself in that concept called His essence, because there is no will to receive there.
Does the Creator have a desire to receive within Him? You're saying that in His essence there's no desire to receive, so the Creator has a desire to receive, or
no.
Doesn't have a desire to receive?
There's a desire
to receive within the Creator?
In the Creator, of course.
The first time I hear about that. Let's understand what's going on.
So what's the Creator, tell me?
Come and see.
Who's coming? Who comes to see? Who comes to the Creator?
I.
You. Who are you?
I'm nothing.
No. Not nothing. You're a will to receive.
I'm part
of... You're a will to receive, meaning the will to receive enters a certain concept called Creator, and then he discovers the Creator. What is the Creator? In what way does it discover the Creator? What does he see? Coming, okay, then what does it mean seeing? Seeing what?
Equivalence of form, trying to equalize my form.
When the will to receive takes on the form of bestowal. So it's the will to receive that takes on the form of bestowal, and that's what's called Creator. Now you're looking at me again, as if you're not... I just followed your words. You were nodding at me, saying yes all the time.
I thought the Creator is something above one's desire, part of His essence.
No, it's exactly... The Creator is exactly within the desire of the person. The form of bestowal we discover in the will to receive is called Bore, Creator. Come and see. And otherwise, you cannot discover it. This is a critically important thing. Firstly, it positions you correctly towards discovery. That's it. Not praying or all kinds of other forms and rituals. And this is the method of Abraham, that no idols are allowed. You are supposed to discover it. Literally, within the will to receive, discover the form of bestowal. And that's the only thing called Creator. Not any idol, a statute, or even philosophies of this or that type. No, in a very pragmatic way. Bow before this.
You screamed at me. That's what I wanted to say.
What? No, but what are you bowing to? You're bowing before the form of bestowal that you're discovering in the will to receive. What does it mean to bow before? Meaning that you lower yourself, you subjugate yourself to reach that.
So there's a part of His essence in this Creator, or isn't there?
Of course not.
There's none of His essence within the Creator, so where does the Creator take the attribute of His soul from?
Oh, so that's exactly called existence from existence and existence from absence. That we'll learn. This is a different thing. It just differentiate between the questions. Everything is jumbled for you.
The desire of the upper force is to bestow, to delight His creatures. And we have a desire to receive. And we build a form of bestow.
Yes.
Where does the desire to receive enjoy? How? Because it has to enjoy, since it's bestowing upon the Creator. And that's the desire of the Creator to delight His creatures. The desire to receive has to enjoy. According to the force of to the law of the equivalence of form, that's the purpose of creation.
Right. The goal of creation is to literally enjoy.
Yes. Light is pleasure. So yes. What is the form of bestow? How do I bestow to the Creator?
Enjoy!
So this means that if a person receives joy from the source, he feels the source itself, the light. The pleasure, the light,
yes,
of pleasure. This means that within his intention, that he enjoys only because the desire of the Creator is to delight the creatures.
Correct.
So how do we, from the group, from the connection between us, work lishma? What is
to give him pleasure.
Yes, give him pleasure.
By enjoying him.
But we have to feel this pleasure.
Right.
This light.
Yes.
But where do we feel this pleasure between us? We have to feel it. How do we feel it?
How?
In what? How? Yes, how?
You need to have a desire for that pleasure. Then you'll enjoy when you get it. Right now you don't have a desire.
We're talking about the love of others.
Yes.
That I have to transcend my desire and bestow upon the others.
Yes. You have a desire for that?
Let's not talk about that. The question is different.
Okay, fine. That's okay.
How does a person receive pleasure from bestowing upon others? When does his heart is being filled with? Because it has to be filled with something, since the purpose of creation is to be filled.
This is where the question lies. Do I need to love the others, or do I need to love the Creator?
This means that I have to love the attribute of bestow. The form of bestowal.
That I don't know, the quality of bestowal. If I love the Creator, should I be loving towards the created beings?
Yes.
Because He loves them. I love them because He loves them? Or I need to love them even if I would not discover that He loves them?
This means they have to receive pleasure in the kli of the others. Not in the kli
right,
of self-love.
Right, what type of pleasure?
Bestow.
Meaning if I give you something and you enjoy it, and I enjoy just watching you enjoy, that's it, that's bestowal.
This means that if I bestow to the others pleasure, this means that I realize the purpose of creation. By doing so, I bestow pleasure upon the Creator.
Oh, that should be added. If, to begin with, in order to please the Creator is not present, then my bestowal towards others is just wrong.
That means. So why? What's the problem? If we learn so much and do so much, and every day you're saying the same, the love of others, it seems that we lack this understanding, that we lack bestowing to the Creator, to receive pleasure from bestowing upon others, because the Creator enjoys that.
Right. It's all
Israel,
true.
The Torah and the Creator are one.
All
that's what
true.
We lack.
So what do we do?
Work.
Oh, great. Very well. You're right. So let's continue.
L'chaim.
Okay. How old are you? 23 years old. That's a good age.
No.
Well, let's go.
3. Inquiry number 4. Since the chariot of the Sitra Acha and the klipot, the shells, is so far at the other end of His Holiness, until such remoteness is inconceivable, how can it be extracted and made from holiness? Much less that His Holiness will sustain it?
In other words, we learn this, we don't know, but say that there is a system called Sitra Acha, the other side, and Klipot, shells, containing all kinds of horrible, evil forces. Maybe not that horrible and evil. I don't know. Needs to be tested yet. But, nevertheless, these forces are opposite to the emanator, to the Creator. So, how could it be that there is something that is opposite to the Creator, both in our world and in the upper worlds? It is said that it's impossible. Everything exists according with the Creator's consensus, and not just consensus, but He set up and prepared everything, all those forces being cunning and shrewd and creating all this trouble to us. Then how could it be that He's good that does good, having created such a dark, terrible world for us? And we are so miserable and lowly barely getting through our 70 years of life in such an ignoble manner, and he has designed all those evil forces that just give us sorrow. And then he is called good, that does good, and he created this for us to reach love of the created beings and love towards him. So there's great contradictions here with what's happening. Not by chance he brings up these powerful and relentless inquiries. They should indicate to the person that what you were afraid to ask, I'm asking for you. What you couldn't even express with in your complaints, in your appeals, I'm doing it for you. It's all included in these questions and inquiries. And if you can't see it here, you'll see it later, or you can ask. But I'm saying that there is nothing that exceeds the system here in terms of the system itself, how he surrounds it and dissects it into 10 sefirot or 10 circles. However you look at it, whether through a line or a circle, with these questions and inquiries, he simply encompassed it all. Okay? Yes?
It's difficult for me to see the connection between these high, sublime, nice questions and the normal people.
But please go ahead, ask. Anyone who has anything to ask about life, these questions are included in these inquiries he brings up here. Everything, all included. Whatever complaints one has, not just here in our world, but in all the degrees, all the mans, anything towards everything. Because these inquiries include the complete desire created by the Creator. So it's certain that there's nothing that exceeds them.
Yes, but how to take...
So you don't see it. Okay, because the question seems very general. It's a question about some spiritual mechanism, and you don't see where your questions reach a solution in it. Okay, but he can't list the billions of questions that you have in every moment in your life and collect them all together, and then will you end up with? At the end of the day, it's one question after all. Give me pleasure. So this is what he explains to us here.
It's so complicated. I want to go to the soccer stadium.
Complicated. It says that it's all simple. There's nothing complicated here. If a person, having gone through many confusions, coming to the true literal meaning, then he sees how simple it is. What's confusing us is only our mind, our intellect. Seriously. We have to evolve the emotion as much as possible, because we are sentient beings. We are a will to enjoy. And our life is built in such a way that we don't want to engage in our emotion, but more in the intellect. Our world and everything is built like that. And this is the klipa.
It's something that can happen today in Israel. This transcension, this passage from intellect
yes,
to emotions.
Yes, yes, undoubtedly. I'm seeing changes already on the way. Please.
Inquiry number 5. The matter of the rising of the dead. Since the body is so contemptible that immediately at birth it is doomed to perish and to be buried. Moreover, the Zohar said that before the body rots entirely, the soul cannot ascend to its place, in the Garden of Eden, while there is still remnants of it. Therefore, why must we turn and rise at the revival of the dead? Could the Creator not delight the souls without it? Even more bewildering is what our sages said, that the dead are destined to rise with their flaws, so that they will not be mistaken for another. And after that, He will cure their flaws. We must understand why the Creator should mind that they would not be mistaken for another, that for that He would recreate their flaws and then would have to cure it?
Clear? No one wants to ask anymore. Either everything's clear or nothing is. Well, it's a simple thing. The matter of the rising of the dead, right? Everyone knows that there's going to be a revival of the dead. First, everyone has to die and rot, you know, until the only thing you have left is the loose bone. And since the body is so contemptible that immediately at birth it is doomed to perish and to be buried. Moreover, the Zohar said that before the body rots entirely, the soul cannot ascend to its place in the Garden of Eden, while there are still remnants of it. Therefore, why must it return and rise at the revival of the dead? If it's so contemptible, if the soul cannot rise to the Garden of Eden if it exists, then why does it need to exist once more? So he says, could the Creator not delight the souls without it? It is written that the soul cannot rise to the Garden of Eden if it's dressed in the body, only when it dies. So then, if it dies, why does it need to be revived? What, that brings the soul back down from the Garden of Eden? So, even more bewildering is what our sages said, that the dead are destined to rise with their flaws, meaning, not just like that, but they don't have anything after the body rots entirely. Why does it need to revive with its flaws? So that they will not be mistaken for another. What do I care and who will say that it's something different or not? And after that, the Creator will cure their flaws. What for? Why do we need the bodies or their healing? We must understand why the Creator should mind that they would not be mistaken for another, that for that specifically He would recreate their flaws and would then have to cure them. Understood? Okay. I don't have the time, so I'll just say the answer. To begin with, the will to receive was sacred. That is, it was always in adhesion and nothing else. And the whole detour we went through is only in order to rise higher towards the Creator, so we possess the feeling of the 125 degrees, that accuracy, that sensitivity, that subtlety of sensing Him, bringing ourselves from the level of the created being to the Creator. That's why the will to receive must undergo the entire full circle and then be revived with its flaws, so that we have the comparison of how it was at the beginning of creation and at the end of creation. And having gone through all the degrees, after it is rotten entirely, and then specifically through our own work and efforts and the entire revival of the dead, we then discover how, with that will to receive, that discernment we receive after the revival of the dead allows us to truly adhere to the Creator. With that, we will conclude.
So, announcements. The Kabbalah La'am Academy invites you to a free lesson to get acquainted with the wisdom. And the lesson will be held tomorrow, Thursday, 6:45 p.m. in the Hestedrut 44 Street, Haifa, next to the mall in Haifa. There's no admission. Superwoman, a woman's workshop dedicated to the International Woman Day. We will have a superwoman, meaning a super workshop for women, Thursday, 8 p.m., the 7th of March in the Arvut houses. Invite your friends, woman friends. More details on 1-700-707-200 or arvut.org. Let's rise. Together we shall rise.
יש תפילה של כוח שנוכל את הלב לפתוח עד שיקיץ האור וניתן לנפשנו דרור נמלא את כל הבורות שזה מכבר יבשו ממים ונצמח כמו אילן עם הברק בעיניים נעלה פותחות שערי שמיים וקשרות הקצוות עוד מעט נלמד לחיות